Moncrief on News Talk.
Just to remind you, this day week, we will be in the National Opera House in Wexford. That's Friday, July the 5th. Bit of chat, bit of music, and of course, music and booze. If you'd like to come along and be part of that audience, you can register. Go to newstalk.com/events and put in all your details there. You have to be over 18. And of course, that's all with thanks to our friends in Marks and Spencer. Today, though, we are joined by Gene Smullen, Rachel and Brian, and ooh, I've got a ticket to Taylor Swift, Chris Wasser. and they, you got them on the first round. Yeah. It sounds so like an election.
Yeah, it was like an election. It was more stressful than an election.
I'd imagine so.
Yeah, my partner, she's the one who got us the tickets. So yeah, thanks to her, that four of us got tickets and spent €600 on four tickets as opposed to one ticket for £600. So we didn't do too badly. Okay. I mean, it's outrageous that gigs cost that much now. But at the same time, we got them. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah. And did your partner have to kind of queue for 7 hours or sit online for 7 hours?
She's a secondary school teacher, so she had the day off there last summer. So she did. And herself
just the
and
day.
Her friend.
Just the day off in the summer.
Yeah, she really did. Okay. Yeah, herself and her friends, they all did take time off to sit there and queue in the online system. And we got them, yeah. Got some outfits made as well. We are going with her brother-in-law and I made us t-shirts that were inspired by the Tom Hiddleston Taylor Swift era. So we're going with I Heart TS t-shirts. And you're giving me a look that says that that might have been a huge mistake. But
No. I'm sure it's a legitimate fashion choice.
We decided that it's all ridiculous and it's all, it's all a bit of a circus. So why not play along?
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. Yeah. But you didn't, you weren't tempted to go down to, because you know the way, got the whole thing to sell merch and stuff.
Yeah,
now.
In the point for 4 days, sell the merch. No, I'm not spending £80 in the hoodie. No.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Two t-shirts for £50, Sean. That's the way to go.
Okay, that's the way. There are some limits. Yeah. Right. So today's movies today, Kinds of Kindness, Lanthimos is back. Is this a bit more challenging, let's say?
Yeah, this is actually Yorgos. This is a tale by Yorgos Lanthimos, because the last couple of films have been someone else's stories. Like The Favourite was Deborah Davis and Tony McNamara. Poor Things was based on an Alistair Gray novel. So this is him getting back to telling his own stories, which are very, very weird and very unsettling.
Yeah.
And it's actually three films in one. It's a bit of a triptych fable is what they're calling it. So we're going to be looking at that, and we're also going to be looking at Kevin Costner's passion project, 36 Years in the Making. It's called Horizon, an American Saga, Chapter 1. There are four these things, Sean, but we're getting the first one this weekend.
Four of them?
Yep. The second one will be out this summer. So we're getting two Kevin Costner films this summer. The third one is currently in production, and the fourth one he just finished the script for.
And 36 years in the making.
Yep.
That intrigues me.
Yep.
Because you know when Kevin, when the world was peak Kevin Costner, when he was like famous and stuff and Dances with Wolves and all that, he made, because I had to go look it up because this sounded familiar. He made a movie called The Postman in 1997, which he also directed and starred in.
Yeah.
And was absolutely panned by the, actually ended with people unveiling a statue of Kevin Costner.
Yeah,
it was that
yeah.
much of an ego trip. One review called it Dances with Myself.
It was exactly that, yeah. It was the ultimate vanity project and a cautionary tale as well for actors who want to direct themselves and they get a little bit too close to the material. Mm. I think Kevin Costner in the mid-90s, he ruined a very good run there. Because between 87 and 94, he was on fire.
Yeah.
And then he just flew a little too close to the sun and that project just killed his career, derailed it for quite a few years. You'd think he'd have learned his lesson. He's now pumping like 38 million into these
Hence
things.
Hence the 36 years to get this made.
Yeah. Based on a dream he had one night, Sean. Yeah.
But I heard they were getting, I heard it's getting good reviews. And it's the whole, you know, the Western.
No,
which
it's not. I don't know who you're talking to, Jane, but
well,
no one is not.
Maybe, now, that's the baby boom generation. I grew up Sunday afternoon watching Westerns. There are a generation of us who actually do like Westerns.
But it's not Westerns. He wants to be Clint Eastwood.
He does, yeah. No, there is only one Clint Eastwood. No, there's nothing wrong with Westerns at all, but there might be something wrong with Kevin Costner's Westerns.
All right. So what wines are we quaffing today,
going
Gene?
Island hopping in the Mediterranean, Sardinia and Sicily. And in fact, I am off to Sardinia next week.
Good luck with that. I hope you're not flying Aer Lingus.
I'm flying on the airline that isn't on strike.
Okay.
So the great thing is that the sparkling wine is the big new thing in Sardinia. And I know nothing about it. So I'm going over to judge a competition sparkling wines in a competition, so okay. I'll learn about it.
Yeah.
And then Sicily, which is the largest island in the Mediterranean, Sardinia is the second largest, we'll be looking at very nice white from there.
Okay.
Or red
okay.
from there, sorry.
Yeah,
red from there.
Excellent stuff. Right, Tom Hanks, next movie's called Here.
It's called
Not
Here.
Ah, Here. But no. They've just released a trailer for it.
Yeah, so this was released this week and it was kind of billed as a sequel to Forrest Gump, which got me really excited, of course. And then I dug a bit deeper and it's actually nothing to do with Forrest Gump, the original movie, which is a little bit disappointing. But the reason it's being kind of tied in with it is because it stars Robin Wright, who was his co-star in Forrest Gump. It's got the same director. It's got the same screenwriter, I believe. But it is being billed as a very ambitious movie, right? Because it's all set in one living room.
Okay.
The entire, and not just in one living room, one camera angle. So the camera is in one position for 104 minutes and it does not move.
I'm hearing the word cheap.
I would say so, but let me also tell you, it spans a huge range of decades and therefore we need our de-aging CGI, which I assume
right.
probably isn't.
Okay.
Maybe that's where all the money went. So they're like, we'll just keep the camera in the same position. And the plot seems to be quite straightforward in that it's, you know, Tom Hanks and Robin Wright's characters, they're a couple. They meet when they're teenagers. It's Tom Hanks's house, well, his character's house. And it's just about the relationship and growing up. And then they live there and they have kids. And it's all through the decades. And I think it's a very interesting concept.
It's nice. Yeah, it's kind of like a stage play though on it.
Yeah, it's nice to see something different. But I'm thinking like, if it's that one angle, we're not going to see any close-ups. Are we going to see the emotion? Are we going to see the tears? Are we going to see the laughter? Do you know? Because you're only going to see...
It's only one locked off camera and that's it.
Like one wide angle of a living room. So like if someone's over in the far corner kind of having a bit of a moment or a cry, we're not going to get to see them as well.
Yeah.
So that would be my concern.
It's a challenge. It actually spans 65 million years and it's going to go back to the idea. It's a very ambitious
idea. Okay, hang on. This isn't just when they were teenagers
No, he's
not that old.
The idea is that what happened in this one spot? There were once dinosaurs here and then the world almost ended and then there were, you know, people and then who settled on this land and then we focus on the couple that move into this home.
It does show you from like the Big Bang up until the 1960s, like in this one spot. And that is quite fun. But I feel like that's only a short part of the movie. And then
Probably. Most
of it's on this family's life. And so basically, Tom Hanks and Robin Wright, they're 67 and 58 in real life, but we're going to see them as teenagers. So we have our lovely de-aging CGI of them. And I don't know why. Like, I think it's because I know he's 67. It freaks me out to see him with the weird de-aging.
He used to be young.
I know, but he looks even like more youthful than a real 16-year-old. Like he's just, it's like he's wearing a filter on his face, which I suppose he is because of CGI.
Is that the de-aging technology hasn't reached the point yet where it's convincing or just because you know they're de-aged?
I think it's because I know they're de-aged. And they're so well-known, both actors, that it's, you know what's going on. Do you know
you
what
can
I mean?
Do amazing things with hair and skin and clothes and movements, but you can't fake life in the eyes. Like there's a deadness there. Or not even dead. It's not, it's
God,
just there's
poor
a...
Tom Hanks.
But there is. Something happens when you do that filter that the eyes become more glassy. And it's so strange. But look, it's... Robert Zemeckis, who makes it, he's taking a chance again and he's doing something original and I applaud that. You know, it might be terrible, it might be so weird that it's uncomfortable, but I like that he's still taking chances on the storytelling. So.
I think it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah. Gotcha, what age must Robert Zemeckis be actually?
He'd be in his late 70s now, it's
Yeah, he's been on the go a long time. Yeah. So fair dues to keep trying things, really. And Colin Farrell's getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yeah, this is very exciting
for
Colin Farrell.
Don't you have to pay for that?
This is what I discovered doing my research for this. Yeah, so he was announced. He's one of like 30 new Hollywood Walk of Fame, the class of Hollywood Walk of Fame for 2025, including David Beckham, Jessica Chastain, Jane Fonda. He's in very good company, right? But you get picked and you'd be delighted that you got it. And like, what an honour. When do you want me to come out? You have to pay $75,000. Before they give you the star.
Jesus.
It's not
and
wild.
And does he have to pay that himself?
Yeah, it's for the creation and the installation of the star and then the upkeep of the area. Now, there's like over 2,700 stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame already. I don't know if you've been there, but like there's a lot of stars. And some of them are a little bit cracked and a bit like sad looking. So they probably do need some money to, you know, clean them up, spruce them up, keep them looking good. So he has to pay that. And then he has 2 years from when he like agrees to it to pick the day he wants to have his big ceremony and they do a big kind of opening thing. It's great. I think he's the only other big Irish actor that has a star so far is Pierce Brosnan. So like, you know, he's pretty good. But like, I was going to say it's kind of, it is an honor. But like, there is nearly 3,000 other people with the stars. You know, it's not like, very exclusive. Diminishing.
But it must take up like a couple of streets
it
then.
It takes up like, hold on, I have the
it's
actual
more than
stats.
A walk.
15 blocks of Hollywood Boulevard and and loads of the street and Vine Street in California. So it is, have you been to it? I've been there.
No.
And like,
no.
You know, the first street, you're like, that's lovely. And then you realize how long it goes on for. And the ones further out are names you probably don't really know. And they're a little bit sad looking. I think really they need to just contain the stars in a smaller area. And then maybe the stars won't have to pay 75 grand.
And the neighborhood, like the further along you go, is it like a bit dodgy? And there's like wee stains on them. And,
yeah,
you know.
It gets a little less glam the further you follow the stars out of the boulevard. Yeah. So hopefully Collins will be, you know, closer to center.
Okay. Robert Zemeckis is 72.
Okay.
Apparently. So he's still a sprightly 72-year-old. Can your wine expert recommend a nice white wine from Limoux? Limoux.
Yeah. Limoux is actually a sparkling wine region.
Yeah. They were in this. Anyway, anywhere in Dublin you can get this. I was in the south of France a couple of weeks ago. I had an amazing bottle of Limoux Blanc Dédicace Chateau Rive Blanc 2022. When we were out for dinner, we'd love to get something similar.
Yeah, I mean, independent of license, you will be able to get. And I don't, that specific wine, I don't know whether, you know, I haven't got a database in my brain. But but actually, Limoux is a very famous sparkling wine, Region Blanquette de Limoux. And it's southern France, great white wines. I don't know what area this person is in, but if you go to your local
Limoux, though, I mean, it's
and
get one of them.
It'll be easy enough to get. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Right. So, we'll start off with what we're drinking.
Okay. Now, the wines that we're featuring today are brought in by a girl called Anna Maria Andusetti, and she has a company called So Italian Wine. I first met her at Taste of Dublin. It was about 15 years ago. It was actually my birthday, right? We were both working. She was selling wine. She just started up her company, and she had this company called So Prosecco, and she made her own Prosecco brand, and there was three wines in the range. And so she was there at Taste of Dublin trying to get people to wear wine. And somebody told her it was my birthday, and she sent over a bottle. So when the show's over, we all killed the bottle. That was great fun. I thought that was very nice of her, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, because, you know, I work at the trade, the two of us have got to know each other over the years. So she's actually expanded her range, and she now brings in wines from all over Italy, including these two. And what I liked about this is that they're both from the two islands, obviously, Sardinia and Sicily. The first one is the 2021 Supudu, it's called, S-U-P-U-D-D-U. Is the name, I don't know where the name comes from, but the grape is the important thing. The grape is called Vermentino di Sardegna. Well, to say Vermentino, it's easier. I can't do the Italian.
It's Friday.
I never had to hear for music or pronunciation. Anyway, this is $17.95. Now, you can buy it on Anna Maria's website, which is soitalianwines.com. But you'll also get it in Lott & Co. They have a few shops, Beggar's Bush, Clontarf and Terranure, Thomas and Fox Rock. Believe it or not, the Blue Groat in Remelton in Donegal and Boyles, down with Judith in Boyles off licensing Kildare. So, as I said, Sardinia is the second biggest island in the Med, and it's steeped in thousands of years' history. But there's very strong links between Italy and Spain. And in fact, Catalan is spoken there, and it's one of the recognised languages on the island. It's got mild winters, hot summers. It's ideal for wine production, and especially white wines, and now increasingly sparkling wines, of which I don't know much, but I hope to after next week. Vermentino is the native white grape, but this has now become so fashionable, especially among younger people. And Vermentino has now been more widely planted all over Italy and beyond. So it's a grape variety that has really started to gain traction. And one of the reasons is it's a grape variety that has a high level of what we call polyphenols, which means it's quite aromatic and not dissimilar to Sauvignon Blanc, except it's got a more oily, weighty texture to it. So what's attracting people who like Sauvignon, people who like acidic grapes, this is the appeal, aromatic acidic grapes. This is the appeal of Vermentino. But it's also got a kind of a saline character as well, which is quite unique, and a sort of a bitter almond finish. Now, I'm probably not selling this very well using the descriptors that I'm using, but trust me, when you try it, it's really worth trying. Mm. So this, produced by Silvio Carta, which was a winery founded in Sardinia in 1929. So obviously they've been making wine for a long time. This, like, when you stick your nose in there, you get that kind of, it is that almost herbal notes. A hint of wild herb is what I'd say on the nose there, definitely. It's, you know, it's not like Sauvignon where you get all that sort of aromatic, you know, grassy asparagus and, you know, thiol coming, or thiol aromas coming out. This is more, it's kind of more earthy, more wild herb. But when you taste it, it's got this lovely, it's a more robust style. It's got this lovely oily, weighty texture to it. This will stand up to anything with a lot of flavour in it. If you're cooking with spices, if you like putting chili in dishes, anything, chicken, fish, you name it, it'll just go with it. But it's also a light, it's got a nice level of acidity and a lovely kind of that almondy character going on in the back palate. Lovely wine, $17.95. It's called Sous Perdue, and you'll get it on soitalianwines.com.
Yeah, and Sous Perdue is two separate words.
Two separate words. S-U-P-U-D-D-U.
Yeah, Sous Perdue. Yeah. So, and a nice distinctive kind of label on it, so it should be easy enough to spot.
You and I are standing guard in one of the last great open spaces, Trent. There's no army off this earth that's going to stop those wagons coming. Little as they're wanted.
So I guess you'd like to explain that to the indigenous?
I know. That may be a thing that never does get explained to them. Now, your Apache, he thinks that if he can salt the earth with enough of our dead, that he'll stop those wagons coming, spoil the place for us. But you study the newcomers. They'll look out at ever so many graves and it won't make the least difference. So all they see is this. The place isn't unlucky. It's just a sit under it. And that's what a man will tell himself, tell his wife, and they'll tell their children. But if you're tough enough, smart enough, and mean enough, all this will be there someday. That's how they'll reason in the face of fear. They're the ones that are going to hold out. And guess what? Some of them will.
It's Horizon, an American Saga, Chapter 1. It's in cinemas now. So, Chapter 1. Okay, so yeah. Is this set the setting up the story or it's, the start of the story?
Yeah, it's 181 minutes of setup. There are two films coming out this summer. So the first one's out this weekend. Chapter 2 is out the end of August. And Chapter 3, as I said, is filming at the minute. This film is the reason why, I mean, he can say it isn't, but it is. It's the reason why he left Yellowstone. Because,
That's the guy we heard there is also in Yellowstone.
Yeah,
He's the enemy.
Danny Huston's in Yellowstone.
Yeah, he is.
Okay,
yeah.
Right.
He's the, like, the effete West Coast type who comes into Yellowstone.
Stone. Well, there are actually a few other actors that are part of the project, but I think Yellowstone's fifth season took an awful long time to come together, and then there was the splitting in half. Like, we got the first half.
I don't think they finished shooting the second half because they owe him money.
And, well, he was quite frustrated. So basically, it was something about scheduling conflicts and also contract issues. I think he might have wanted more money, and he also wanted more control, because the longer that Kevin Costner is involved in a project, the more he starts to wreck the director's head. I mean, something like Waterworld. Like, himself and Kevin Reynolds fell out on Waterworld, like, because of his backseat directing. And he was also a bit of a nightmare, apparently, on the Robin Hood film. But here, he's the man in charge, and he's put his own money into it. He's put $38 million of his own money into this thing, because other studios are like, you must be out of your mind if you think we're going to back this. Because they're probably looking at something like The Postman or Waterworld or maybe his last Western, Open Range, like 20 years ago. A very good film, but it just, his Westerns don't make money.
Yeah.
If he was making a baseball feature, I'd watch another baseball feature by Kevin Costner. Yeah. And I should say, I like Kevin Costner's films. His sincerity, you know, his old-fashioned sentimentality, like it's endearing. It's impossible. If a Kevin Costner film is on, I'm going to watch it, even his worst ones. But this tested me, and there are times when you read reviews by critics who say that they found the plot to a film hard to explain, and it's like I usually call that out. I'm like, that's bold. It's your job to explain this. There were times during this film where I thought, I don't know what to do. I don't know what is going on here. It's the cinematic equivalent of being at a party.
And you're reviewing a Yorgos Lanthimos film next. And explain the Kevin Costner one.
Wait until we get to that. It's going to be a bad day for me. There were times where I thought this is the cinematic equivalent of being at a party, starting 100 different conversations with 100 different people and never finishing them. And afterwards, you're just like, what was the end of that? You know. So basically, we're in the 1860s. It's something to do with a white pioneer settlement called Horizon. You've got all these white people setting up a town and then horrified to discover that, oh, the land actually belongs to somebody else. So you've got surprise, what? Shock, horror, and all the rest of it. So you've got these soldiers telling these people, these soldiers led by the very handsome Sam Worthington from the Avatar films. Mm-hmm. His handsomeness, I mentioned for a reason, because he's telling all of these people that, you know, well, what did you expect? You have to go here or here, but you can't go here. And he meets a woman who has just lost most of her family. She's played by Sienna Miller. And she goes from this grieving widow who was essentially buried underground womanist to just falling head over heels for Sam Worthington's character. So you've got them. Then on the other side, then in Kansas, you have Luke Wilson leading this wagon train and having to put up with these lazy Brits. Then in another part of the country, you've got Kevin Costner, who's this horse trader, but he might have a bit of a secret power and a very particular set of skills.
Okay.
Then in another part of America, you've got this woman who has...
he's secretly good at knitting somehow. Yeah.
He's fabulous looking in this film, I should say. It takes an hour for Kevin Costner to show up, but when he does... The shirt is so neatly ironed. There's not a speck of dirt on him. The mustache is neatly trimmed. He's very kind to himself in this film.
Is he using the de-aging technology?
He might be. But there was a bit of... there was a spark in his eyes. So that's how you know.
A twinkle.
Yeah. There was a twinkle in his eyes. And then you've also got Jana Malone's character who has killed her father and then her brothers have chased him around the place. All of these stories, I presume, at some stage down the road are going to connect. But do they connect in this film? They do not. And the whole time I was kind of... Some parts of it are thrilling. Some parts of it are beautiful to look at, well acted and all the rest of it. But it's a mini series on the big screen. He's created, if you were to split, and I think he might have a plan to do this at some point down the line. If you were to call time after 60 minutes, you'd be like, that's the first episode of a series.
Did you say it's 180 minutes?
It's 181 minutes, yeah. That extra 1 minute.
Wow.
It might break you.
It pushed me over the edge. So I just thought it was bloated. It's mismanaged. It's a mini series on the big screen. That's not how films work. I mean, he said earlier on the week that he left Yellowstone. I'll see you in the movies. I'm all about the movie making now. It's like, no, you're still in television serial mode. And also, at the very end, we're in the middle of a scene that is suddenly interrupted by 100 different scenes. And I was turning around to my colleagues going, what's going on here? There's a trailer right at the end for the next film, but it interrupts the scene. It comes right in the middle of a scene. It's almost just like the film just kind of has a panic attack. And I didn't know what was going on. That should give you an idea of
how
messy
it is. And then it goes back to the scene again.
Yeah. It's almost like this flash forward.
Yeah.
You know, next week on Horizon.
Yes.
And it's all over the place. I mean, I appreciate what he's doing here. I admire him. You know, there's nobody else doing these kinds of things,
thing,
like funding
yeah.
their own films like this. Best of luck to him, but it's a mess. It really is a mess.
And presumably these different storylines are going to meet up because they're all headed for Horizon.
They have
they don't even say that.
Oh, well,
even say to Luke Wilson, well, where are we going, by the way?
No,
anyone
no.
say, is this town?
No, they have to at some point. I think something may have gone wrong in the editing. I mean, at one stage, Kevin Costner's character, Hayes, this is a character that first came to him in a dream in the late 80s. And he was so obsessed with this character and so obsessed with bringing the story to the screen that he actually named his son Hayes. So his son is named after a fictional character he came up with, and then he cast his son as someone else's son in this project. But there's a moment in this film where I thought something's gone wrong in the editing suite, because we see Kevin Costner meeting this woman who's with the child that's actually not hers, and then 5 minutes later they seem to be in the middle of a relationship. We cut away from them and then we come back to them and months seem to have passed and they're in a relationship with one another, and it's like, you can't do that, Kevin. You have to show us how we got from A to Z. No, it just doesn't work. Doesn't work.
So they've actually cut scenes out of a film that's too long anyway.
Yeah. I feel kind of bad. Well, not too bad. I mean, I'm sure he's doing okay.
Yeah.
But he really believes in this project. I mean, you might have seen the scenes of him at Cannes at the premiere where he was in tears at the end, and he got an 11-minute standing ovation.
Don't they always?
Yeah, they really do. And so he believes in it. You know, there might be an audience there for us. I'll go along to the next one because I have to.
Yeah.
But there's nothing there that makes me excited for, you know, three more chapters of this thing.
How does he then even get a distribution deal on this?
Because he's Kevin Costner.
He knows.
Is that really it?
I think so, yeah.
Because but if it's pants, it won't do people, you know, because people ain't going to the cinema so much anymore. That's, so you think that the distribution companies are less willing to take a punt on what seems to be a vanity project.
Sell it to one of the streamers then.
He will eventually.
Oh, he will eventually. Yeah. But how much money has he spent? If he's put 38 million of his own into it, how much more has been put into it?
I think it was 50 million per installment. So there are backers there.
That's relatively cheap then.
Yeah, it really is. And he's worked well with it in terms of like it is at times a beautiful looking film. Like there's flashes of brilliance here, I will admit. But flashes of brilliance in a 3-hour feature, that's... It's not enough.
Not enough.
No. And there is a renewed interest in Kevin Costner, so maybe because of Yellowstone. And he has embraced, he's actually embraced getting older an awful lot more than his peers.
You know, like
Kevin Costner as an older character actor, that actually works for me. You know, there still is a little bit of magic there.
And the Western genre. I mean, everybody's done this Marvel stuff to death. So somebody at least is trying a new kind of version of something old.
Yeah. You know? Actually, if you are interested in the new Western, Viggo Mortensen wrote, directed, starred in. That sounds like another passion project.
Yes.
But it is exceptional. It's called The Dead Don't Hurt. And it's playing in cinemas at the moment. And that might have passed an awful lot of people by because it's a much smaller film. Himself and Vicky Creeps are in it. You know, Vicky Creeps from Phantom Thread. Mm-hmm. Gorgeous piece. And it's an original piece of work. It's not based on anything. And it's a Western. And that works. And it's a lot more effective. And also Danny Huston is in it as well.
Oh my God, Danny Huston's getting a lot of work.
Yeah.
And in Horizon, does it have that kind of... Actually, somebody says, this sounds like How the West Was Won, updated. Does it have that kind of slightly mythic feel that often cowboy movies...
Not yet.
Are trying to promote where they're going out to the promised land and the pesky Redskins are trying to hold them back from...
Not yet. No. It really is... I actually want you to watch this now because you will see how uneventful it is and that there's not an awful lot there. The whole thing should be at this point of the story, right? Give the audience something that will make them excited and eager to want to come back to this. And it's not there. It's not.
Maybe in another 3 hours.
Maybe in another 3 hours.
Something fun will happen.
Life's too short for 12-hour westerns.
Cowboy movies are the US equivalent of the UK war movies or the warm beer and cricket on the village green, harking back to a time when men were men and white men ruled. Yawn.
That's another thing, actually. It can't shake off. There is that uncomfortable feeling that, you know, as much as he's trying to kind of say, you know, that the white man was the enemy here and that we were encroaching on other people's lands and we did slaughter people, there's no way of... He's also trying to create heroes out of some of them and you can't really do that. You just can't. Mm.
Yeah, because it's in that clip even he used the term indigenous.
Yeah.
Mm. They wouldn't... That's not a term they would have used in those days.
No.
Absolutely not. Right, so why do you release a trailer for a Christmas movie in the summer?
It's a really good question, isn't it? I think to give them a good 6 months to rile people up to get excited for this movie. It's called...
Wouldn't you have forgotten about it? You know, you've probably watched 2 other Horizon movies by the time it comes out. So, you know,
damaged. They're probably going to do one, I'd say, every couple of months to get you all excited for Christmas.
Right.
But it doesn't feel right. But I have to say, having watched the trailer, it doesn't feel extremely Christmassy. Right. So this is called Red One and it stars Chris Evans and Dwayne Johnson, a.k.a. The Rock. And basically, Dwayne Johnson and Chris Evans are members of what they're calling the Elf Squad. And Santa Claus goes missing. Santa Claus is played by J.K. Simmons and it's their job to go and find him. So it is absolutely, all in all, an action movie. Like, even to watch the trailer, it's not like a nice, wholesome, Christmassy kind of vibes. Like, it's an action movie that just happens to center around a storyline to do with Santa Claus and Christmas. So it looks absolutely ridiculous, but it's out on November the 15th. Lucy Liu is also in this as well. I think it'll be a bit of fun. Apparently, Dwayne Johnson and Chris Evans have both said they've always dreamed of starring in a Christmas movie. So again, I feel there might be a bit of self-indulgence in this, that they've kind of been like, we want to be in a Christmas movie, we're going to make it happen. And they've made Red One. So it looks...
When you say it's an action movie, does that mean like kids can't see it because, you know, people are getting their heads chopped off?
I know.
What was that Santa movie where that Christmas movie were?
Oh, Violent Night.
Violent Night, yeah. Oh, was it like that?
I don't think it's going to be that violent, but there's a lot of shooting. It's like Mission Impossible. Like, this elf squad, like, it doesn't sound serious, but it actually is extremely serious. in the context of this movie. Like, they take their jobs extremely seriously. The reindeer that I seen in the trailer are like the size of dinosaurs. Like, they're really, really big. There's talking polar bears. But it's all, it's like Mission Impossible, but about Santa Claus, and Dwayne Johnson's in it.
Yeah.
I like, if you're into action movies and Christmas, if they want me to write a summary for it,
I
can't.
Did you see that story going around that Dwayne Johnson was supposed to be a nightmare to work with on that film, and that he kept showing up late, and as a result of his lateness then, to save time, and he was the one who was showing up late, to save time, instead of taking toilet breaks, he had a bottle with him and he just peed into the bottle.
Oh, wow.
And there were complaints from some of the people working on the film.
You'd imagine so.
Like, yeah. Please stop doing that.
And where was he leaving the pee when he was, like, was he just leaving it around the set and people were tripping
I don't
over
know
it?
That part of the story now.
Or handed to some poor...
Just carrying it around.
...production assistant.
Here, hold my pee.
Hang on. Yeah, this Coke is a bit warm. What are we drinking next?
We're going to Sicily now. This is the 2021 Otto Venti Aruca Nero d'Avola. It's a late harvest and it's from Sicily, 1695. And you'll get it from soitalianwines.com. The Otto Venti means eight winds in Italian. Nero d'Avola is the big success story in terms of red grapes from Sicily. Sicily is very, very popular now in terms of one of the sort of fashionable wine regions from Italy that everybody's going to for great value and really good quality wines. This Aruca is actually organic and vegan certified, as are all Otto Venti's wines. It's a small vineyard area, about 40 hectares in western Sicily. Now, what is it about Nero d'Avola? It's a full body grape like Cabernet Sauvignon, but it's got, it's a late ripener, so it's got sort of robust tannins as well. But the thing you always find about red, Italian reds, acidity. They always have a lot of acidity. You know, no matter what Italian red, you know, even if you go up and you have Sangiovese from Tuscany, it's always going to have acidity. That's very much characteristic of the Italian red grapes. This is a lovely well-made wine. The acidity actually in this is not as severe as I'd normally be expecting. But again, you're down in, you know, warm, very warm climate. It's quite restrained.
Yeah, it's
so
lovely.
Is the tannin.
It's lovely.
But it's beautifully balanced. And it's only 13.5 alcohol by volume. It's a complex, elegant wine. And I think at 16.95 punches way above its weight. But this is why Sicily is definitely the place, one to watch in terms of it. The wines produced here offer great value for the price that they're sold at. This is a very good example of it. And again, you know, Nero d'Avola, a grape variety that's gaining a lot of popularity in recent times.
Yeah, that's a complete winner. So, Rachel, Andy Serkis has been talking about what inspired him to create he didn't create the character of Gollum, but what inspired him to kind of depict Gollum. And apparently it was Rishi Sunak.
Yeah.
No, I just made that up.
What a shocking twist was. Yeah.
No, it was his cat. His name is Rishi Sunak.
Yes. No, it's not. No. So everyone knows and loves the character of Gollum, whether you're into the Lord of the Rings movies or not. And like, Gollum is a very iconic character, mainly because of this incredible voice that Andy Serkis has given him and the movements that he did creating the character. So he was doing an interview talking about other stuff and, you know, Gollum obviously comes up and he revealed that, if you don't know the story of Lord of the Rings, Gollum is a hobbit who became possessed by the Ring of Power. And, you know, it kind of messed him up, right? So he's a bit possessed and he kind of,
There you go. 500 pages condensed down to that.
He's a bit messed
well
up.
Well done.
Yeah. So he kind of, his mind is a bit all over the place.
Messed up hobbit.
He kind of speaks, you know, involuntarily and all that. So Andy was looking for the perfect thing to base his version of Gollum off. And he said one day his cat came into the room, his cat called Diz, and started, you know, hocking up a furball, and you know that kind of and he was like, perfect, I'll take that, and he took that as inspiration for the way Gollum speaks. And he basically, he's like, it's well documented, he gives a big credit for the character to his cat Diz, who I hope is getting a cut of this.
Yeah, I hope so.
Right?
Yeah, our dog does that. This is kind of like, I swore to God I check her kennel for cigarettes because something's making her,
she's got a smoker,
something's making her do that.
But sorry, Gollum is getting his own movie. This is very exciting as a fan of Lord of the Rings, called The Hunt for Gollum, and it's in production at the moment with Peter Jackson, the original director of Lord of the Rings, and it's due for release next year.
Okay, all right. Good to see Gollum coming back. Right, we'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is Kinds of Kindness. Here's a clip.
Can I have a cigarette?
Sure. I didn't know you smoked, Liz.
I don't. I've never smoked. Can you believe that? I've never even tried. It just really felt like a cigarette. Should we all go upstairs to the bedroom?
I think it's best we don't go up to the bedroom tonight.
What, we're gonna f*** on the table? Come on, Daniel, that would be weird.
We'd better be getting home soon. Liz, look, you must be tired and I have to be up early. But everything was wonderful tonight, though.
I think you're right. I think we should leave it for some other time. Maybe next time.
I'll clean up the plates.
Okay.
Weird.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure. Were they playing that for laughs? Or?
No. It's a Yorgos Lanthimos film. Yeah. And all of his films exist in this kind of slippery sideways world where humans are just miserable. Nobody's happy. Common decency is a myth. Everyone is needy and manipulative. And they're all just kind of constantly seeking approval. And they all kind of talk to one another as though they're like characters in a stage play. And I'm okay with that in his films. Like, I love the Lobster, The Killing of a Sacred Deer. I'm actually a bigger fan of Yorgos Lanthimos films when, as I said at the top, when he's telling his own stories. Because on Poor Things, it was someone else's script. I mean, he's an extraordinary manager of someone else's stories, but when he gets to tell his own, I think his films soar. And also, I thought Poor Things, celebrated by the Oscars and by every other awards body, I thought it was a little bit overrated. I think it's an incredible central performance by Emma Stone, and it's a beautiful looking film thanks to the Irish cinematographer Robbie Ryan. But I just thought it's a pantomime Frankenstein. You know, and yes, it just goes on for far too long. But this, I was quite intrigued. This film frustrated me, but it also entertained me. It's three films in one. It's almost like Yorgos Lanthimos's Twilight Zone slash, it's almost like a Yorgos Lanthimos Presents. You know, there's a little bit of Hitchcockian magic in there. There's a little bit of Black Mirror too. But it's three stories, and he's using the same cast, the same six actors in every story, which is actually a neat little trick because you kind of then get to see each actor kind of explore like different messed up variations on humanity. Okay, so the first story is all about this guy played by Jesse Plemons, who's the star player here, who will be nominated for awards here. He won Best Actor at Cannes actually for this. He is playing a man who he can't even dress himself in the morning without his boss telling him what to do, and he's in this position where his boss just plans out his whole life, from the meals that he eats, from the woman that he married, as I said, like what he wears in the morning. But his boss one day asks him to take another man's life and he says no, and his boss then turns his boss played by a very unsettling Willem Dafoe. His boss then turns his back
when
on him.
When is he not unsettling?
The Florida Project, the one film where Willem Dafoe was a lovely chap. But his boss then turns his back on him, and then this guy, played by Jesse Plemons, is horrified to discover that he's, without this codependent relationship, he can't make any decisions for himself. So he starts living a life where he can't order anything off a menu. He doesn't know what to do when he gets up in the morning. He can't dress himself. So it sounds very, very strange, but it's actually quite effective. The second one is about a man who's wife is missing at sea. That's Emma Stone coming into it there. She returns, as you could hear in that clip, and he's convinced that the woman who returned is not his wife, but some sort of supernatural imposter. Okay. And then in the third one, you have Emma Stone and Jesse Plemons playing a couple of recently appointed members of a cult who believe that there's a woman out there somewhere in America, she's played by Margot Qualley, that can revive the dead. And so they are going around trying to find this woman so that, you know, she can be the leader of their cult.
Yeah.
What do these stories have in common? As I said, I think now, because an awful lot, it's all open to interpretation, that they're all just about showing, that we're, as a race, we're just terribly needy and we're always getting ourselves into these toxic friendships or working relationships or relationships at work or, you know, romantic relationships where we all just kind of become a little bit too dependent on one another. I think that's what's going on here. I think it would be an awful lot more effective if he had trimmed things down, because the second structureless, shapeless film we're talking about today is also 3 hours long. And it's too much.
Are they told sequentially, these stories, or are they cutting back and forth?
No, they're told sequentially. So it's 50 minutes, 50 minutes, and then 50 odd minutes. Yeah. And they all come with an end credit. So if you're actually going to see it, if the end credits come up after an hour, stay seated.
Fair enough. Yeah. Okay.
And look, they're effective, but short stories are always better when they're actually kept short. So if you trim things down and you tighten things up, I think this could have been something special, but it will test your patience. But I will say it's brilliantly performed. You know, the cast, they go above and beyond, sometimes a bit more than actually this film deserves. But if you're a fan of his, you know, very peculiar worlds where, you know, people act very strange, as you could hear in that clip, you will like it. You will.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, if Jesse Plemons then also wins an Oscar for this one, then...
I mean, they'll be,
you'll be able to go get them to keep coming back forever. You owe me an Oscar.
Yeah, people will be lining up to work with this guy. Just so long as he keeps himself in check. There are a few signs throughout that no one is saying no to Yorgos Lanthimos anymore. Like the weird ideas. He's just getting everything made. I just hope that that somebody keeps that in check. But I did like this.
I look forward to his cowboy trilogy when that comes out. Chris, Gina, Rachel, thank you all very much.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.